Campus FM presents The Probe, produced and presented by Monique Chambers.
Welcome to The Probe with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Dr. Godfrey Grech from the Medicine and Surgery Pathology Department here at the University of Malta. So how long have you actually been working here at the University of Malta?
So I started my lab facilities in 2008. So I worked since 2006 as an academic. And in 2008, we opened up the labs, the facilities to start research, or I actually continue research, but I started my part of research.
Okay, so what were you working on at that particular time?
Okay, so I've been studying abroad for 4 years, so I brought with me a lot of information, research data sets that we worked on before we actually started the labs here. And at that point, we started working on leukemias.
Okay.
And our idea was to look at particular mechanisms that go wrong in oncology, in cancer.
Okay. So that's finding out how leukemia is cured or how it actually happens.
Okay. So first you look at how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But as most cancers, it's a big umbrella. Cancer is a big umbrella which has to be divided into different types. And therefore, first thing that one should do is really understand the different types. And then from those types, you identify what is the cause. It's not an easy thing to do. But if you can, you try and understand the cause. And there you move on to try to target it. So
eliminating a behavior or creating...
We like to put an analogy to it. So like if you think about a watch or these... things going inside there, one moving the other.
Yes.
Now, if one of these sort of gears will go off, then you have a mess in your watch. Okay. Same thing, we try to understand how the gears are working.
So you're still working with cancer now, is it? You're dedicated to that research?
Yes. So we started off with leukemias because samples are relatively more easy to gain and to get. And also because I studied in leukemias when I was abroad, where we identified a particular mechanism, gear,
mm-hmm.
That goes wrong during cancer, because leukemia is blood cancer,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to sort of study that mechanism in detail, which took us, and still doing it, but to really understand it well, it took us about 8 years to do that. So it takes time.
And how many sort of samples do you have to take? How many people do you have to expose to the research?
Okay, so that's a very good question, because that's one of the reasons why leukemias, we didn't continue with leukemia here in Malta. Although we do the mechanisms and understand, we have a big collaboration with Rotterdam Medical Center.
Okay.
And this is where we translate what we study here in our labs to patient material.
Does that mean there's a low instance of leukemias in Malta, but we have different rates of different cancers, or it's...
Okay, so this is always a problem of the Maltese population size. So if you think about incidence, mm-hmm. you might have the same incidence as in the Netherlands or the UK or other countries, but that percentage translates to a very few amount when you have a small population. That doesn't matter, because what we do is we study using Maltese material,
mm-hmm.
we translate it using bigger cohorts.
Okay.
And that's very good, because you have collaborations, of course, that opens up collaborations. And then what we find there, we translate it back to the Maltese population. So it's always our intention is we study, but then we want to see, and we end up with our cohorts.
So is there a difference when you do research like this across countries for something medical? Is there a difference even in our bloods? You know, or is there, because of, you know, is the Maltese blood and our strains essentially completely different to those in the Netherlands?
So in the genetics, there is a big difference. So we have a very peculiar type of genetics here in Maltese population. Because if you think about the Maltese population and how it evolved, there's a lot of population booms coming from different areas of the world. And that puts us in a position genetic-wise in the genetic pool to have a special genetic pool.
So it's quite interesting.
It's interesting, yes, it's interesting. In relating to mechanisms of disease, they are quite similar between cohorts.
Right.
Because then it's a different idea. So you have genetics, but you also have sort of what's happening, these gears, to study okay. these gears, what's going on. First you asked me where we moved to. So we started all this work with leukemias, mm-hmm. and we pinned down this mechanism. And then we moved now to, since 6 years ago, we started breast cancer research.
Okay.
And again, we've studied the same mechanisms. And this March, we launched the colorectal cancer research. So we're moving on to various areas, but always focusing on a specific mechanism, a specific gear that goes wrong in these cells.
You're working with the Rotterdam University again, or you're working with different ones in these cases?
Okay, so with breast cancer, we're working with Leeds. So the Molecular Medicine Institute is in Leeds in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't work with the same collaborators for various reasons, because in Rotterdam there's a very good hematology department. We worked with them in leukemias. I did my PhD there, so okay. that was easy collaborations. In the meantime, you start working on other areas. You go to conferences, you know, and you meet people, you get people over here. We have even Italians coming to use our facilities because we have a very good state-of-the-art facility in Malta.
Is this the pathology lab in itself, or there's...
Well, I like to say a facility because I don't want to say like this is department is better than the other department. And therefore I say we should have the biggest lab because we should cooperate, and that's what we do. And I say the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery is quite equipped with instrumentation to do research today.
So this research is, you said, started in about 2008. And is it going to, or how do you justify saying we need to do this research now? How, I mean, obviously cancer, you know, needs to be cured, but how do you justify your element? How do you get someone to listen to you and say, no, we need to pinpoint these gears that are going wrong? This is actually the starting point for this research program.
As I said before, I mean, we don't stand alone. Okay, so in fact, I am leading now a cancer group within the European Association of Preventive and Predictive and Personalized Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I just came from the UK on a Precision Medicine Congress, which we also were present there. So
okay.
it's a way how you discuss, all right? Then you go to the consultants at Mater Dei or SAMOC, mm-hmm. Medical Center, Oncology Center, and you discuss with them. You say, look, we're finding these. What's your current situation? What would you like to have tomorrow? It's not that we just do research for the curiosity point of view, but we want to answer specific questions. And we have various projects, okay? So we have the basic projects mm-hmm. that will take a 10-12 year period, all right? So that's huge. But this is where you find the missing links. Then you have those small projects around that are actionable projects, which means you do something, you try and translate it as quickly as possible to the clinic. And this is our motivation, that we translate to the clinic.
So the clinic then does what with that information? They use it to educate patients, or for surgery, or for drug conversations?
How we have various examples. So in the clinic, one of them would be you identify a particular, we call them markers.
Okay.
Something that you can measure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if there is something that you can measure, and that output measurement, mm-hmm. Data,
yeah.
Will give information to the clinician or the oncologist, that this patient should go on this therapy rather than on this therapy, that this patient, if he or she would go on this therapy, will have a resistance, it doesn't work, it's not benefiting from it. If you know that at diagnosis, at the time the patient goes into the hospital, mm-hmm. it's better than waiting for months. to see if it works or not. So this is what we feed in as what we call actionable markers. Action, you do something about it. Yeah?
So this is real life, you know, patient data. This is, you know, this patient goes in, you analyze their data, they are given the right advice because of the research that you've done and these gears that you've found.
Yes. So research is based on, as I said, basics. So we utilize models, which are mainly cells, okay, which we grow in vitro. Okay. So those we call models. And from there, you translate then to material. For instance, give you an example, okay, without being difficult. Give you an example. So we are now working on two measurable markers. Okay, we did that on models. Then we looked into data set information that we got from Maltese patients, and also information that we find online from other institutions, because today there are a lot of databases available.
Okay.
And then we say, oh, these markers, and we found that these markers actually tell us that there is a subtype in a group of patients in breast cancer that today they don't have a specific therapy. So first you said, what's the cause? Do you want to look at the cause? That's difficult. But we have markers for cause of disease, like in breast cancer. We can divide them into three groups.
Okay.
Two of them, we know what is the cause of disease, and they have targeted therapy. So they go in with a specific therapy, and they do well. The others, we don't know, and therefore they are given the normal therapy. And this is where also we can want to know and divide them into different groups to try and find targets.
And so these three groups, for example, are they of equal sort of size, or is this unknown group, a small group of people that are coming up with something, or is it it's random?
It depends on which cancer we're talking about.
Okay.
So like in breast cancer, we are sort of, we know of two specific ones, and that's, you're hitting quite a percentage of the cancers. But of course, we always think about those that we don't know in research setting. Okay. Even though we have a targeted therapy for one of these groups, there is also other problems that we want to understand. So if a patient is on the therapy and after some time that therapy is not beneficial anymore, we call it resistance. We want to understand that. And we have a big project coming up on that to try and understand about resistance. We don't work alone. Okay, it's a big collaboration between different institutes. So there are various questions one can ask. Okay, regarding proportions, it depends. So in colorectal cancer, we don't have very specific markers.
Because it's new research, or?
Because it's difficult to understand.
Okay.
Okay, and also most probably because there are, today there's the screening, you know, so you screen, you also identify first stages now. So now we're starting to understanding more the early stages. Whereas before you don't screen, you don't have those material at hand. So
So really important for people, obviously, not just for their own health, but for future generations to go through these screening programs.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
Give more and more data.
And also helps research to understand better what's happening at early stages. Because, as I said before as well, I mean, we are trying to look at early diagnosis. Okay. And, of course, trying to understand why some therapies do not work, etc. So there are various levels to work on. So we're heading on to the early diagnosis, hopefully in the next few months.
And this is working with these other universities and other collaborators?
Yes.
Excellent. If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Probe with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Dr. Godfrey Grech. So, you were saying about these markers and the research that you're working on has currently taken about 8 years. When do you see an end to that research, or is that, how long is a piece of string?
Yes, so I also said that this is because you're looking at causative genes, that will take a long time. And of course you have other actionable markers that you try and do it within 2 to 3 years to put it in the clinic. But let's state these that we have the 8 years period. It's long because, first of all, you have to get consenting and everything, so ethical approved, etc. So all the patients will have to sign that you're going to use this for research, which is a good thing to do, but of course that takes a long time. But today we have biobanks. Okay. That are being organized.
And what's a biobank?
A biobank is where you put tissues in from patients that consent for research. But there are also banks at the hospitals, mm-hmm. which are for reference as well, for services, for eventual services. So these are banks in which you start creating a lot of material that you can utilize to understand these mechanisms. It's very complex. These mechanisms are very complex. So to try and pin down what goes wrong at a particular stage is very difficult. Also because in cancer progresses. So to try and understand what was the initial hit mm-hmm. in material that has already progressed for a long time, it's very difficult.
Right, okay.
And that's why I also mentioned that we're hitting now early diagnosis, because this is better than using late mm-hmm. progression. And also because once you find something, then you have various protocols to go through to translate it to the clinic. I'll give you an example. For instance, we worked on this mechanism, as I said, for 8 years. Now we know a lot about it. We can ask very specific questions and we get very specific answers to those mm-hmm. with our materials at hand. Okay, so now it goes very quickly. But then once you find something which is very interesting and important, right? Then you have to move on to bigger cohorts. So then you have to start putting together a consortia internationally that would work together. And ideally you put also industries together, because you want to see if you can target this with a drug, mm-hmm. because otherwise it's not actionable, right? And although we have something at hand, that will take a long time to get approval.
And then there's the drug approval, yes, example, yeah, so after that.
That's why it takes a long time. But this is normal. So as we are working on this, we have others that are already in the process of getting approved. So it's one after the other. So
how is research funded? Because obviously it does take mm-hmm. a long time for the reasons mentioned, but you can't sell the research to a drug company until it's proven, I guess, or do you get sponsored halfway? How does research actually get funded?
Okay, so there are various schemes and various ways to do that. As a university, there are the European schemes, so the European programs, mm-hmm. okay, and like Malta, Italia Protocol, we just finished a huge project, okay, with Professor Christian Sherry as one of the partners in the Department of Physiology. That's why I told you also before, pathology doesn't work alone, it's all the departments that work together. And we apply for projects for funding. We just finished a 4-year project now, gave us a good fund. We had one postdoc meaning a person who has done his PhD.
Okay.
And we have a salary for him for 3 years mm-hmm. to work with us. All right. And the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery has also its own schemes to fund the research officers to help us do the research. So salary-wise, these are the various. We have interests from other people abroad who are actually applying for funds to come and work with us through European schemes as well.
So like a job swap almost, they get to...
Europe has a lot of these mobility schemes, loves mobility, all right, for researchers. And we utilize those as well, okay, to get people in the group, because you need a lot of human resources to do a project. There are national schemes, and we are currently working on one of them, and there's another good sort of funding opportunity. There, where you start putting together academia, industrial, for eventual approvals. Okay, yeah. So today the schemes have changed from pure basic research, so stay in the lab, do and have fun in the lab. Yeah, this is not on anymore.
Okay, it has to become a business.
It has to become an actionable thing that eventually there is a benefit from the public. So this is other schemes, other funding opportunities. Of course, collaborators are very good, because when you put a collaboration together, my fund, which is so much, it will become twice or three times as much, because then I'm doing this part of research, my collaborator is doing something else with his own funds, so this, the project then becomes bigger and bigger. And those are the main funding opportunities that we have.
What about private funders? Do people leave legacies to organizations like yours, especially for, you know, you're working with breast cancer? Do people leave legacy to help in the research?
So we are very happy that three years ago, one of the NGOs, for instance, together with the initiatives of Alive, the cyclists,
yes,
yeah, we managed to get, for instance, a scholarship for a PhD student. And 1 year ago, we managed to have the second one. So okay. Now it's very nice to see the public being part of what we're doing, and therefore it's very nice that I'm here to discuss what we are doing to so that the public knows as well.
Of course, okay. It's really important to know, say, especially with breast cancer that affects pretty much every family, that there's something being done about it locally, and it sounds like you're making great strides, in fact. So thank you, firstly, from personal perspective. And any other ways that people can help? Obviously, maybe donating their tissue for these libraries and things, or their samples if they become a patient. Any other ways?
Well, my last slide on every presentation I give internationally is that we cannot do this without the consent of the patients to be part of the research. I think it's something which is very honorable, okay, to have patients donating tissues, also because sometimes we also state that maybe this will not be of beneficial within the generation, but eventually. So that I think is something of big courage from the patients to help us do this. Without them, we don't manage for sure.
Okay. And is there any other projects that you're working on apart from this major project for breast cancer that you can talk to us about?
Okay, so as I said, we launched also the colorectal cancer in March. That's because we managed to get a postdoc position in our group through a national scheme. So it's a funding scheme. And she started working on colorectal cancer. So we're in the middle of doing all the ethical approval, getting, so it's a lot of paperwork, but has to be done.
Yes.
So my current project is being sort of developed into various observations and various claims, which we take those observations and we say, is this actionable or not? Is this actionable or not? And happily, I would say that we have three of them which are actionable. So then we are moving now and putting together consortia also with industry to try and put this into the clinic. So that's one thing. The second thing is that, yes, we are moving now towards early diagnostics, okay? And that means that we would have material from patients even maybe during screening, so very early on, and we try and identify what we know now in what we call liquid biopsies. Let me explain that.
Yes.
When I said that we try to understand the GERS, okay? You need patient material to do that, right? And there we use tissues that are taken from surgery during treatment or diagnostic. So you have already a patient.
Yes.
Okay. What we're trying to do is trying to translate what we know in tissues. So imagine this is a solid tissue, okay? And try to understand if I can read it in blood. That's
so
what
it would
liquid
be much
biopsy
quicker.
Is. It is more available and earlier, okay? So this is where we are now moving on our research, because we know, as I said, we have three actionable markers. We want to translate that now into liquid biopsies, working on early diagnosis, and then
this could be something that literally the patient benefits directly with the right treatment plan.
Yes. And the most important is early diagnosis.
So what are you actually looking for in the blood that would see the same results as you see in the tissue?
Okay, so there are two aspects that you can have a look when you're measuring blood samples. One of them is what you have as an actionable markers and try to classify patients accordingly. Okay. And when you do that, therefore, that's called to have individualized or personalized medicine, so that you have which therapy one should go.
Right.
So that's one. But the idea of using liquid biopsies, blood, is to try and find a way how to early diagnosis. So it's not that the patient went into the hospital with symptoms and therefore it's an advanced stage, but if you can do this before and you identify people before, like we do with screening programs, but now more targeted, then that's what our aim is. The second one, from blood, you can measure genetics. And genetics is another area that we work on. And with genetics, you can measure a risk, like the BRCA1 mutations, which were, discussed with Angelina Jolie making surgery so that is a risk. That doesn't mean that there is that you will have breast cancer, but have a high risk to have breast cancers, and therefore you can do some kind of strategy to try and prevent it.
Right.
Okay. And here I'm not saying that you should this or that, but there are different strategies. Okay. It could be screening every so often. But with genetics, you can do other things, like right now with the European network that we are organizing, that I'm sort of heading the cancer part, we are very interested in preventive genetics. And in preventive genetics, you try to understand normal genes, how they work, and like even metabolism, which, for instance, a person should go on this kind of nutrient plan or not.
To maximize their health.
Preventive, very preventive, all right. And we're doing this in a European context because we have questionnaires throughout the countries. And it's not only nutrition, you have nutrition, you have risk factors for, you have other things that I would not open up at the end of the program, of course.
Excellent. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Godfrey Grech, on this week's edition of The Probe with me, Monique Chambers. Thank you for joining us on this week's Probe. Speak to you next week.
You have just listened to The Probe, produced and presented by Monique Chambers.